are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation and Houdat family? Welcome into this Thursday edition of Locked On Saints, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Ross Jackson here at Ross Jackson, N-O-L-A on Twitter, editor over at CanalStreetChronicles.com, and your host covering your New Orleans Saints every single Monday through Friday. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar of your dreams. Literally, I had a dream last night about the peanut butter brownie flavor. I'm not lying. Go to BuiltBar.com and be sure to use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off of your first box. On today's episode, we've got some Saints news for you, thanks to Nick Underhill at NewOrleans.football. It sounds like the Saints had a different draft strategy in mind until they learned about the interest of a couple other teams. We'll talk about how the Saints changed course in the first round and ended up with Cesar Ruiz at 24. Then I'm joined by Luke Braun of the Locked On Vikings podcast to wrap up the NFC North Divisional crossover. And finally, we'll dive into your questions for our Twitter Thursday segment this week and talk about some of the best wide receiver groups that the Saints will face in 2020. We got all of that and a little bit of land yet for you on today's episode of Locked On Saints, your team every day. While the New Orleans Saints may have always been interested in Michigan offensive lineman Cesar Ruiz, they almost didn't select him at 24 in the NFL draft. That's our New Orleans Saints lead story of the day today with Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. We heard a lot about the New Orleans Saints and the trouble that they had trading up in day two in order to get a hold of Zach Bond. They ended up doing so, only having to move up to pick number 74 from 88 to do so, which actually ended up working in their benefit. But they mentioned a lot of times where they had, you know, some trade talks were underway and then they either sort of petered out depending upon what was going on in the draft and how the board was falling for other teams, or they had something that they felt like was very much in place and then the other team backed out from it until eventually they landed their trade. Well, it sounds like that's not exclusively just happening to the Saints, but the Saints also ended up having a similar situation happen to them from the other side, to where they ended up pulling out of some trade talks. According to Nick Underhill from over at NewOrleans.football and at Nick_Underhill on Twitter, he mentioned that on a call with donors from the Louisiana Lafayette Athletic Foundation, Jeff Ireland, who's the assistant general manager as well as the college scouting director for the New Orleans Saints, mentioned that he had pretty strong intel that the Miami Dolphins and the Kansas City Chiefs would take Ruiz in the first round. Now, remember, the Miami Dolphins selected just two picks at number 26 after the Saints at number 24. So not a lot of breathing room because, according to Ireland, the Saints initially looked to trade back but called it off when they learned about other interests. So with the Dolphins selecting just two selections after them, and with the Chiefs sitting at number 32, with the ability to trade up if they really wanted to get after Cesar Ruiz, it made sense for the Saints to say, no, we're going to stand pat at 24 and select Cesar Ruiz. But there's a couple of things to keep in mind here. Remember that the three players that have been mentioned so far that the Saints were interested in the first round that aren't Cesar Ruiz were Jonathan Taylor, which was a big media storm that began right before the draft. You also heard Coach Payton specifically mention Javon Kinlaw as well as AJ Terrell out of Clemson as well, but they ended up taking Cesar Ruiz at 24. It sounds like the Saints may have been interested in trading back, getting some more selections potentially either in the 2020 draft or looking ahead to the 2021 draft, depending on what deal they had with what team, and then still trying to get Cesar Ruiz. But it sounded like because Ruiz was the key, right, the actual target for the Saints with their earliest selection, wherever that ended up being in this 2020 NFL draft, that ended up being what it was that influenced them to stay at 24 and just make their selection outright. Now, there's perhaps some evidence to support this as the Miami Dolphins ended up trading out of pick number 26 and trading back with the Green Bay Packers, who moved up to select Jordan Love. And then the Dolphins ended up trading back to pick number 30, where they selected Noah Igbinoghene, the cornerback out of Auburn. So you can see the connection between their actions in the 2020 draft, as well as this statement by Jeff Ireland that they were interested in Cesar Ruiz, who came off the board at 24. So they traded back out of 26. Now, it's pretty important to take a look at the fact that the Saints were talking about trading back and trading out of pick number 24, because the Saints haven't traded back since 2007. They did it the first 2 years that Sean Payton was in the building at 2006 and 2007, but they haven't done so ever since. So now 13 years later, all of a sudden, they were interested in trading back because their target seemed to be Cesar Ruiz. But once they learned that trading back may cost them their shot at who's now projected to be their starting center going into the 2020 season, they ended up standing pat and taking their guy. So for those of us on team trade back, we almost got what we wanted from the New Orleans Saints. And I'd love to hear from all of you. Would you have rather seen the Saints trade back? Are you happy with the Cesar Ruiz pick, still knowing this information? I'm personally still happy with the Cesar Ruiz pick, knowing this information, although it does create some intrigue about the Saints wanting to trade back. Would they have taken a future pick along with selecting in a new position in 2020, or would they have ended up adding picks in 2020, which may have aided them in trading up for Zach Bond? Would they still have traded away all of their day three picks in order to move up for Adam Trautman? It's a really interesting conversation. So would love to hear a little bit from all of you in terms of how you feel about that. Many ways for you to contribute that. You can always jump over to the Locked On Saints Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Locked On Saints, or you can call the Locked On Saints listener line 504-229-4265 and let me know your thoughts there. And then I can play your audio here on the show as sort of a feature here on the podcast. So lots of different ways that we can have it, but love to hear how this information affects your thoughts about the Cesar Ruiz pick, if it affects them at all, especially also knowing that two other teams that picked, one of which almost immediately behind the Saints, were interested. And it's sort of intelligible when you look at what the Dolphins ended up doing after the Saints selected Cesar Ruiz. So good information here and an interesting one. And it also continues the sort of trend of transparency from the Saints organization at this point in the offseason, which has been very interesting, very intriguing. And, you know, as somebody that covers the team, very fun to watch sort of come to light as they share all this information. So continuing on with today's episode, we'll have our Twitter Thursday segment to close out the show. But before we get to that, Locked On Vikings host Luke Bond is coming through to talk a little bit about a preseason outlook of the Saints and Vikings Christmas game later on this season in week 15. He answers my questions and my curiosities about that very new look Vikings defense, Justin Jefferson in their offense, their draft, and more. We got that coming up for you next here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. Today's episode of Locked On Saints is brought to you by Built Bar. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. 16 incredible flavors, including 8 of which that are nut-free flavors, and they're covered in 100% chocolate. Soft and easy to chew, no gritty texture, no weird sort of getting stuck to your teeth and finding it in your teeth 3 hours later, no having to put it in the microwave in order to get through it. These guys, super easy to eat, super enjoyable, and everything that you need. Let's take a look at the peanut butter brownie flavor, which I literally had a dream about last night. 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, and only 3 grams of net carbs. Compare that to the label on any other popular men's protein bar, and you will find that this is the better option for you in a lot of different ways. Not just the taste, not just the flavor, which is absolutely incredible, but also the health benefits that come along with it without the guilt. So if you want to try them for yourself, you can make your own box and build your own box at builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to get $10 off of your first order. Make sure you use that promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right, Houdat Nation, we're following along and finishing up actually our NFC North Division crossover, and we're wrapping it up with my good buddy Luke Braun from over at the Locked On Vikings podcast. I know that the sore topic of the Saints and Vikings is something that's running maybe even more rampant right now than it was at an earlier point in the offseason, but here we are to talk a little bit about these two teams and sort of offseason outlook for both. So thanks so much for taking the time, Luke. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you about all this.
Yeah, let's fight. Let's get down to it.
Yeah, let's just argue for the next 7 minutes. One of the big storylines coming out of Minnesota this offseason, of course, was the trade of Stephon Diggs to the Buffalo Bills. But you trade, the Vikings trade him away, and then they land Justin Jefferson in the first round. So what's the barometer on a move like that? Do we look at that in Minnesota Vikings land as an improvement, as a lateral move? Is there a little bit of a decline there early? What's the expectation for Justin Jefferson stepping into that role or whatever role he fills on that wide receiver core?
I think most people agree that it's option C. It's a decline, not a terrible one, but it is definitely like it, you can't expect any rookie, even one that we're really excited about over here in Justin Jefferson. You can't expect him to come in and be Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is an elite receiver. He's going to be great over there for Josh Allen. But yeah, Jefferson, he has very little experience on the outside. He hasn't played there for a significant amount of time since his sophomore year at LSU. He was fine there, but he's clearly better in the slot. The same goes for Adam Thielen. You kind of want to put Adam Thielen in the slot so that he matches up against typically weaker and smaller nickel corners. It's a really good mismatch. And now you kind of have to use that for Justin Jefferson. You can swap it. You can have Jefferson on the outside. There's a little risk. You just don't really know what you get there. And have Adam Thielen in the slot, or you move Thielen outside and you have Jefferson in the slot. Either way, it's not going to be as good as Diggs and Thielen were as a pair. And I don't think it would be reasonable to expect that. But Justin Jefferson is, I think we're all really excited about him, and he goes a great length to mitigate that damage.
Yeah, absolutely. My next question for you, just kind of going over to the opposite side of the ball here. You know, the Vikings did land, I think, a really good piece in Michael Pierce in that defensive line, but it seemed that they kind of vacated the secondary in free agency.
It's an exodus.
yes, it really was. But then they landed a lot of young talent in the draft. So what's the feel right now, a couple months ahead of camp, official training camp, when it comes to the direction of the pass defense in particular?
Yeah, there was actually a Zoom interview with Mike Zimmer on Wednesday where he was asked basically the same question. And he said it reminds him of college, where you have like five seniors graduate and you have to start over. And that's kind of what happened. You lost Xavier Rhodes, you lost Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Linval Joseph. And that's four like starters. So now you have a much younger group. Of course, you replace Joseph with Michael Pierce. That's at least a lateral move. And I think with Joseph was kind of getting old, I think you could argue it's an upgrade. But at the corner position, you're way worse off than you were before. The corners really underperformed in 2019. So it shouldn't be too hard for a rookie like Jeff Gladney to do better than like what Xavier Rhodes was, maybe a bottom five corner in the league. He was dreadful. Shouldn't be too hard for Jeff Gladney to not be bottom five, but for him to be actually good, for that to actually like be an acceptable group is going to be a much more difficult task. You have two elite safeties behind you, Anthony Harris and Harrison Smith. There's a lot of trade talks with Anthony Harris now post-draft with the roster the way it is. Seems pretty likely that he's going to stick around and he'll either play on the tag or get extended. So you have good safeties and that'll help. And you have Mike Hughes. He's a kind of more entrenched veteran that should know the system, and they can kind of put him inside or outside depending on what they want to do with Jeff Gladney. So you have nice flexibility there. But on the other side, you have a competition between a third round pick in Cameron Dantzler, who might not be day one ready, might not even be good, and somebody, Holton Hill, who hasn't been reliable in the past. Of course, a lot of that was marijuana violations. That's not going to be as big of a deal, but he also had a PED violation. And you don't really have a huge sample for how good he actually is. He went undrafted because of the red flags, would have been a second or third round pick without him in, I think it was 2018. And so you have a lot of question marks over there, and it's going to be a battle between those two people in what might end up being a virtual camp. So you might not even have a great idea of like, if you made the right decision. So the cornerback position is a huge question mark, and I don't think they should be done. I think they should go out and get Dre Kirkpatrick, or shoot, even a Tremont Williams, somebody who might not even have the juice that he used to have, but just a veteran that can push these young kids and give them a baseline to beat. Right now, I think you are at a bit of a risk with that corner position. Defensive line, I think, will be fine. They lost Everson Griffin. Ifeadi Odenigbo is going to probably be the starter in his place, and I'm really excited about him. He's kind of Andre Patterson's next big thing. But yeah, I think the secondary is going to be like the make or break. You know, does that work out? That's going to be the question that defines things.
Is there any concern at all? You know, we talked a little bit over on Locked On Vikings about the Saints and their familiarity being potentially beneficial during this truncated offseason. Are there concerns around that much changeover on the defense for the Vikings?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be really, really difficult. And it's interesting because like when I went into this offseason, most of my messaging was like, hey, I really sense that the Vikings are kind of trying to keep as much continuity as possible. You know, they keep Gary Kubiak around, they keep as many coaches as they can around. And then everybody walks and they have a whole bunch of new draft picks. And it's like, well, now this offseason is going to be really, really difficult. And that was before COVID-19 changed the structure of it all. So it's going to be really, really difficult. So to combat this, they drafted like all team captains and workman types and like high character guys. Mm-hmm. And they actually said they spent a lot more time talking to college coaches about their players than they otherwise would have been able to, because all the college coaches don't have like spring practices and stuff to go around. So they're sitting there bored. So Rick Spielman just called up all the college coaches and said, all right, who's your best worker? Who's your quickest learner? And that's basically like that ended up influencing the draft quite a bit. Guys like Kenny Willekes out of Michigan State, guys like KJ Osborne, huge character guy, James Lynch out of Baylor, huge character guy. These are like their day three picks, not to mention Justin Jefferson and Jeff Gladney and Ezra Cleveland, all really, really high character guys. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that can mitigate it and you get guys that can be quick learners and can adapt to the virtual learning, virtual training camp kind of thing that's going to happen. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a concern in spite of all that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we saw the Saints take, I'll say, a similar route in the draft in that they really only drafted three players. I know they had four picks, but they really only drafted three players. But everything about them were, you know, they were all high IQ guys, character guys, things like that. And so I see that same thing. And one of the guys that I really see that in, you mentioned with Minnesota, is Kenny Willekes. And landing him in the seventh round, to me, is kind of a steal. But maybe I missed something about why he dropped. But what's the talk of this guy going into the 2020 season right now?
I wonder if he dropped. He had a leg thing in his junior year. He broke his leg. He came back. He was good enough his senior year, but it's possible that that changed his performance and teams couldn't look into it the way that they wanted to. So I wonder if that had something to do with it. It's also just that he wasn't a particularly productive pass rusher, but he was an elite run defender. Mm-hmm. And maybe teams just aren't valuing that as much. I agree, though. I think getting him in the seventh is really good value. I think he has a much better chance than most seventh rounders to make the team. And again, yeah, he's like a really high character guy, really good run defender, and that'll be nice to kind of rotate in with Afadi Odenigbo, who's also like a kind of a power rusher and like a strength-based pass rusher and run defender versus like one of these quick finesse guys. That's going to be an interesting composition out there on the edge depending on how that shakes out in training camp. But I'm excited about Kenny Willekes. I think he was a good pick to get available down there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's really all that I have for you. I guess the very last thing that I'll ask you just for fun is tell us in just a couple of words what the Colts got in Xavier Rhodes.
Reclamation project.
There you go. That's very diplomatic of you. My good friend Luke Frog coming through from the Locked On Vikings podcast. This is what you hear from the Locked On Saints podcast, and we thank you very much for coming through. But if you want to hear a little bit more of the Saints focus and the great questions that Luke had for me regarding New Orleans, go ahead and check out his show over at Locked On Vikings. Thank you so much, dude, for coming through, and I look forward to chopping it up with you ahead of our Christmas game later on this year.
Yeah, Feliz Navidad. Let's do it.
All right, Houdat Nation, before we wrap up today's episode with our Twitter Thursday segment for this week, as well as taking a look at some of the best wide receiver groups that the Saints are going to take, just want to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. You can use the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off of your first box. Also want to remind you to go and follow Luke over on Twitter, and you can check out, again, the rest of the conversation that he and I had with a little bit more Saints focus over at his podcast, Locked On Vikings. So now I got a question about the best wide receiver groups that the Saints are going to face. So I'm going to go a little bit more in depth about this in an article over at Canal Street Chronicles, which should be dropping in the next couple of days. But I want to go ahead and give you an early sneak peek here in terms of what I think are those best wide receiver groups that the Saints are going to face. So if I'm going from, let's say, 5-1, for me, I'm looking at the Denver Broncos with Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and KJ Hamler. I had a lot of give and take here or really like pull and push here about whether or not I wanted to include either Philly with the addition of Jalen Reagor, or Minnesota with the addition of Justin Jefferson. But if I'm going to lean a little bit more on a rookie wide receiver to define an upcoming opponent's draft class and define an upcoming opponent's wide receiver group, I'm going to lean a little bit more to Jerry Jeudy, who I believe should have been the first wide receiver off the board in this draft. At number four, counting from 5-1, I'd say the Los Angeles Chargers with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. A lot of that has to do more with Keenan Allen than it does with Mike Williams, although Mike Williams is a bit of an underrated commodity for the Los Angeles Chargers. Then at number three, I've got the Atlanta Falcons, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Laquon Treadwell. I really just mentioned Laquon Treadwell to remind you
you all that the Falcons actually signed Laquon Treadwell, which is just outstanding to me. But Julio Jones is really the one that carries the weight for them. You know, no matter how you feel about the Falcons, Julio Jones is one of the better wide receivers in the NFL, and that makes that wide receiver group very good. Now, at number two, this might be a little bit controversial. I've got the Kansas City Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson. I ended up putting them at number two because for me, the number one team are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Tyler Johnson. Apparently, Scotty Miller as well, they really like. We'll see. I'm not even sure if he makes the roster in 2020. And if he does, I don't know that he sees the field much beyond being the number four guy. But the reason why I put Kansas City behind Tampa Bay is simply because Tampa Bay had two wide receivers last year that went over 1,000 yards each that didn't play 16 games, which is just outstanding. And the Kansas City Chiefs, their wide receivers are very much made up by the ball share. And depending upon where that comes from, Patrick Mahomes, now that he has Damian Williams to throw to, Clyde Edwards-Helaire to throw to, and Travis Kelce to throw to as well, those wide receivers behind Tyreek Hill are kind of dictated by whatever target share they get. And so I think it's a little bit more of a volatile group than the consistency, that comes with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So wanted to start there, but let's go ahead and jump over now to your questions from my Twitter page at Ross Jackson NOLA. We'll start off with Saints Truth 44 at Twit with two T's Manola. He asks, what is your favorite quarantine snack? Well, obviously it's Built Bars, but outside of that, I'm a little bit of a health nut, so I do a lot of apples and peanut butter is certainly what I've been living off of for a little while. But if I want to go maybe a little bit more like not so health conscious route, I'm a huge potato guy. I love potatoes no matter how it is that you dice them up. I don't care, I'll eat them. So french fries, potato chips, anything like that when I'm feeling, you know, a little adventurous by my definition, because again, I'm a little bit of a health nut. So I usually stick with the apples and peanut butter in my Built Bars, but now and then I'll go for a bag of Lay's. You know, we'll see what happens. I'm boring, y'all. I'm sorry. Alvaro Lopez at CUB4NN. He asks, I know that it's early, but there's nothing else to do. So what linebackers do you think make the final roster? Do you think there's a possibility that the Saints cut Craig Robertson if the linebacker group gets too crowded? I think Craig Robertson's pretty safe because I'm not sure that Kiko Alonso starts the season on the roster. Not any shade to Kiko Alonso. I just don't know if he's going to be healthy by that time. So for me, your starting three are going to end up being DeMario Davis, Alex Anzalone, and Zach Bond. And then the three guys that end up backing them up are Craig Robertson, because he's the only other linebacker on this roster right now that has NFL experience. I look at Joe Bocci, undrafted free agent, to have a potential to make this roster, because he's really the only other guy that has the Sam backup potential. So I really like what he brings. And then I like a lot Caden Ellis, who they're interested in, really like working out at that Mike linebacker position. Meanwhile, Craig Robertson can play all three, so he ends up being very valuable should you need somebody at the will, for instance. So those are the six that I think make the roster, and I do think that Craig Robertson still has a chance to hold on to his spot. Now, Carlos D at CW999 asked, do you think that the pandemic is going to change the way that the Saints start the season? It's usually slow, but I think the Saints are going to do really good, still doing as much as they can this offseason. I think that this... Okay, so for me, changing the way that the Saints come out in the offseason means that they would come out much better, right? And I don't think that that's the case. I still think that they have the potential to come out and lose week one, which is not going to cost them the season. It's not that big of a deal. It just feels most realistic to me because five out of the last six seasons, that's exactly what they've done. And then now they're coming out on a huge stage to open up the season, which could work in their benefit, but they're also opening up at home in a stadium that may not have fans in it, which would be weird to start the season off, particularly at your home stadium where you're used to having so much energy coming from the fans. So I think that it makes it tough. However, I do think that they have a little bit of a better shot than most other teams because of the continuity. You know, we talked about that with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs maintained a ton of continuity on their team as well. So that continuity, communication, familiarity, as Luke Bond and I just talked about from over at Locked On Vikings as well, that makes a lot of sense that they could do fine coming into the season or be better than other teams coming into the season. So the thing comes down to not necessarily are they going to be better, but it comes down to are they going to be less worse than the other teams that are, you know, dealing with a ton of changeover, like the Buccaneers, who they open the season against. So that's really what it is that I'm looking for, and we'll see exactly how it works out. But I'm cautiously optimistic about the opening game for the Saints just because of their rhythm and record over the last six seasons, but you know, we'll see exactly what it is. I mean, their continuity could be the thing thing that sets them apart from other teams early on in the season. We'll just have to see how it plays out. Next up, we've got Evan at E. Costelco, who asks, do you see Jameis Winston playing with the threes for preseason games, and how does this help pass catchers to have such a seasoned quarterback throwing to them against third stringers? Yeah, I think you'll see him with the twos and with the threes, right? Because they usually end up swapping those backup guys. You'll see, you know, Jameis Winston start a game and then Taysom Hill play the second half, and then vice versa for the next game. You'll see Taysom Hill start the game and then Jameis Winston play for the second half. So I think you're definitely going to see some opportunities of Jameis Winston playing against third stringers. And here's my thing. I think that it absolutely does help those younger guys, those guys that are on, you know, that are just fighting to get a roster spot and have a job. I think that it absolutely helps them to work with a quarterback that has full-on NFL experience, like starting NFL winning experience, as opposed to working with, you know, a rookie quarterback that's coming in for the first time, like the Saints third stringers had to do years ago working with Garrett Grayson, for instance. So I think that it really helps them. It gives them a better opportunity to play well and make themselves a spot on either the Saints roster or on any other roster across the NFL, because they'll have somebody. They're not going to be held to detriment because of what the quarterback can do, right? You're going to see Emmanuel Butler, who's going to probably run with a third team, going to be somebody that maybe stands out a little bit more in the season. You're going to see it basically work out the same way that it worked out for the Saints last year, having Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater throwing the ball. So I think it'll be really, really interesting. And you're going to see more deep shots that way as well with Jameis Winston out there. So that'll be good for guys like, you know, Deontay Harris, or speed guys down at the bottom of the roster like a Marquez Callaway, who's a deep threat. So I think that that's definitely going to be something that's going to be helpful for those guys to get themselves a job somewhere in the NFL, practice squad or otherwise. And I think the Saints absolutely should go undefeated in the 2020 preseason. If they don't, I think it's a disappointment. If I'm being completely, I'm being dramatic, because I know the preseason means nothing. But seriously, they should win every game that they play in the preseason. And then finally, we've got Michael Trying at Michael Trying. Will Sean Payton put Jameis Winston in for a shot play here and there throughout the season? It seems like the very idea would make him rub his hands together and cackle. You're absolutely right, Michael. I think that that is something that you'll see, because there's no reason for the Saints not to get a taste as early as possible as to what Jameis Winston's development has been, so that they can make an educated decision on whether or not they want to keep him around in 2021. Now, maybe they hide him so that he doesn't create a market for himself outside of New Orleans for a potential starting gig elsewhere. It's where the Saints don't end up creating competition for themselves should they decide to keep him beyond the 2020 season. But I think that you do get at least a little bit of a look every now and then at what it is that he brings to the table. To me, Jameis Winston is your backup, to where if Drew Brees gets hurt, then you have Jameis Winston go in without having to change the offense midseason. Taysom Hill, to me, is still the guy that's going to play his usual offensive role. You'll see him involved a lot less on special teams. But if something happens, and even if that means that the Saints are winning or losing big at the end of a game and they pull Drew Brees, then you're going to see Jameis Winston be the guy that comes out on the field. Otherwise, you have to change the offense midseason, and that's not going to be advantageous for you if you're still interested in winning games, right? If you're not as interested in winning games because something has gone horribly wrong in the season and it's late in the season when something happens, then yeah, you put Taysom Hill in and then you make some changes on the offense and then get an early look at how that helps. But otherwise, you want a full offseason to really implement those changes. So that's the way that I look at what Jameis Winston ends up bringing to this team. And so with that being the case, him being sort of the more immediate backup, then I could see them definitely putting Jameis Winston in every now and then to take that shot play down the field, but doing so cautiously as to not screw themselves or shoot themselves in the foot at the end of the season by ended up creating a market for a guy that they may end up being interested in retaining as their future starting quarterback beyond the 2020 season. All right, y'all, that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Saints. Now that you're done here, make sure you tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NFL Draft, catch up with Trevor Sikkema and Ben Solak and everything going on after and ahead in terms of the NFL Draft. And if you continue to listen over there, you might hear a familiar voice coming up within the next few episodes. Make sure you check out Ben and Trevor over at Locked On NFL Draft. I want to give a quick shout out, thanks to an iTunes review, over to Disney Dad PC, who said, Ross is the man. Thank you very much. Keeping it positive and real at the same time. Excited each weekday to get my Saints news and analysis. I appreciate you, homie. Thank you very much for taking the time to drop that review. That's always very, very meaningful and very helpful. I want to make sure I continue to give shout outs to people that do take the time. So thank you very, very much for that. Glad to be a part of your daily schedule here in quarantine, which is a time where we really need each other. So I'm glad to be able to connect with all of you, and I look forward to being able to do so tomorrow over at the Locked On Saints Facebook group, where we'll get your questions for our Facebook Fridays. Make sure you join facebook.com/group/LockedOnSaints. Get your questions in, get them answered here on the show, and we'll continue to work our way through the schedule, look at more position groups that the Saints are going to be taking on and some of the best ones that they'll take on around the NFL, as well as any news of the day, as well as things drop. So thank you very much, as always, y'all, for coming through. Once again, I'm Ross Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Jackson, N-O-L-A. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the show. And if you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe and drop that 5-star rating and review. I thank you so much for all your support and for helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints, and trust to that nation. I'll holla at you.